Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. YouTubers, thank you for your support. Want to say hi real quick. Go ahead and smash that like button and hit the subscribe and the bell and all that good stuff. But Nikias, the hoops does not stop hooping, so it is time for us to hoop it up.
It is indeed time for us to hoop it up. Just a very quick reminder slash some housekeeping to those who are new to us. We on JJ's channel, we'll be posting an episode every Tuesday. We're recording on Monday, so we do miss the Monday night slates. So just keep that in mind as you get this on your Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon, whenever you watch. Just want to throw that out there. But thank you for those who continue to support. Thank you for the new folks. Hope you enjoy. Let's hoop it up. We will indeed start with some quick news items before we dig into the nitty gritty. Some injury notes very quickly. Wendell Carter Jr. suffering an injury to his left hand. He's going to be reevaluated in 3 weeks. That will certainly hurt the center room in Orlando. Though Mo Wagner quietly hooping in Orlando this year, so I want to give him the quick hat tip, but they're going to miss Wendell for a little bit. So we'll see how Orlando adjusts there. And in New Orleans, a couple of notes, CJ McCollum, small collapsed lung, currently undergoing additional examination per the team over the next 48 hours. That news came out on Sunday, so I would imagine we hear some kind of update on Tuesday or Wednesday, but obviously hope that CJ is okay. And a bit of free agency news for New Orleans, signing Jeremiah Robinson Earl to a two-way deal to add some front court depth. Steve is laughing at me because I had this on the dock. What's up?
It was going to lead off the pod.
And listen, as I, you know, accumulate the dock and get things sorted over the weekend, type things out, the news comes in order. We got the two-way signing before we got the Wendell news, before we got the CJ news. So that was the top bullet because I typed it first. And so as Steve opens this thing, he's like, are we leading the U2 episode with Jeremiah Robinson Earl? So I had to move it, you know, I didn't want to get slandered, but,
Oh, no slander, no slander. You're good. User 887's got you in the comments. I will say this on the New Orleans front. Unfortunate. I don't know what is going on as far as, like, I just would like to see them play. Like, let's see them play basketball. And I think this is, what, the second time that CJ has had this specific particular injury. So hopefully he's all right. Hopefully he continues to bounce back and is able to recover. I think it's such a tough part because I've felt positive about how New Orleans is putting this together flow-wise and using their pressure points in different ways, but kind of just flowing into different actions, whether it's CJ screening for Zion and that flows into Ingram. That stuff's been positive. They're going to miss that. And I think that's the most important part for this year. So hopefully he's able to be good. Can I be respectfully messy real quick?
Sure.
Why did that account choose that picture of CJ McCollum with that injury?
I don't know, and neither did CJ, apparently, as he quote tweeted said account said, hey, y'all kind of wild for using this picture.
That was insane.
Oh my goodness, that's not even on the nose, because wouldn't that be the opposite? It doesn't matter. Anyway, we hope CJ is okay, first and foremost. As far as just the immediate impact, if he is going to miss some time, like, Jordan Hawkins is already stepping into more of a role with Trey Murphy the third already being out. Jose Alvarado also out. So I'd imagine Jordan Hawkins is going to get more room. And then to your point about New Orleans and the offensive flow, like, this is where, slander me if you want the comments. I guess this is where the intrigue comes in for me with Jeremiah Robinson Earl in particular, just because of all of the handoff stuff that he was asked to do in OKC in particular. And so I think that movement is going to be even more important without CJ for however long he may be out. There is a role for him in the backup big man room. I guess I will just leave it there. Does that work? Cool.
Oh, gosh. Come on, buddy. Right, you did right. Not like the Jeremiah Robinson Earl show.
That's cool. I'm just kidding. We're fine. Let's get into the in-season tournament a little bit. We got the opening night on Friday. Full slate of games. A whole lot of close games outside of Heat Wizards. So that kind of stinks for the Wizards, but that's neither here nor there. Steve, what were your initial impressions of night one?
I thought it was fun. I think there's no better way for the in-season tournament to start than a 7-game slate where the games are decided by a total of 34 points. with five of those being decided by 5 points or less and one going to overtime, I just think that's a positive. I thought it was fun. It felt different, obviously, with the courts, the uniforms, and guys competed. Players played. The games were tight. And I just think it gives a boost to the regular season, especially early in the year. You get some of these fun matchups. They're all playing on these designated tournament nights. They all have a different feel and a flair. Like looking at Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers offense, zooming on a blue court was fun. And then you see Jimmy Butler just doing Jimmy Butler things. Let me just shoot a fadeaway and then shoot the gap defensively and get a steal on a red court. Like Luka and Jokic trading baskets, looking like an actual video game. I thought it was just fun. What were your takeaways, Nikias?
I'm right there with you. Like having that amount of close games almost at once, considering how the games were kind of spaced out and scheduled, like that was a lot of fun. Like if you are into the NBA red zone type beat and bouncing around league pass in early goings, like this was the night specifically designed for you. For the courts themselves, like I've very much been like, they're fine. I'll own being in the minority on that, if that's cool. But like, they've been fine to me. And so watching it in practice, I'm like, okay, I get this. This is a different vibe. This is neat. The one thing I will say, though, and I'm glad you referenced Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers game in particular, I changed my opinion immediately if the court in any kind of way becomes a health hazard. And like they did note post-game with some of the slipping that they were dealing with. I'm not 100% sure if that's just a paint issue or what the issue may be. But if that does factor into any sort of like health hazard for the players on these designated tournament nights, then I'm kind of like, okay, we can't do that. I don't care much about the design. Like that's fine. Like I'm cool with colorful courts, whatever. I just don't want anybody to get hurt because they're slipping around. So that's my only caveat to add there. But ultimately it was a fun night of hoops. And it's almost like players are going to compete during regular season games that were going to be played anyway. Some of the hand-wringing about the in-season tournament as a concept just kind of bugged me, but that's nothing new. I always get bugged by things. But it was a fun night of hoop.
I raised my hand.
Okay.
Those games are going to happen anyways.
Yeah.
Just enjoy the month of November. I'll put it that way.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, they're just branded and colorful. Like, that's the whole bit. But anyway. Bouncing off of that, Steve, what team stood out to you this past week?
Well, as a trade-off for me making jokes about you, the Atlanta Hawks. Huh. I want to talk about the Atlanta Hawks. Third in offensive rating as of right now. Fourth in pace. They've won four straight as we record this. Now, here's the fun part, Nikias. They're averaging 126.8 points during this win streak. They've overcome a double-digit deficit in three straight games to come back and win. Normally, that's not the most awesome thing you want to like feel at 4-2, but what I will point back to me, it just shows a belief in what they're doing and what they're putting together and how they're trying to grow as a team in this Eastern Conference that may be a little top-heavy, but there's some room. If you go past, well, actually, with Philly, probably 3-9, you would say. Mm-hmm. There's some room to climb the ladder. And so I'm intrigued by what the Hawks are putting together this year. And I go back to last year in the playoffs. It felt like they had a little bit of a sneaky depth. I didn't think they had enough to beat Boston in that series. But you saw the balance of what they could do with Okongwu, with Bogdanovich, being able to throw Sadiq Bey and Jalen Johnson in there. And so that has kind of transferred over to the season. It's a small sample size. I know everyone loves to say that, but they have eight players averaging 10 or more points. They're the only team in the league that has that right now. And if you're able to have that balance behind the duo of Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, and you're building better things around what Trae Young and DeJounte Murray can do, positive things should happen. I feel like every year that we've done this podcast, we have looked each other dead in the eye and said that DeAndre Hunter is the X factor. And guess what, buddy? He's shown up this year. Career high 54% shooting from the field. Career high 41.4% shooting from three. He's been a major plus. The other part of this, and this is for you. I'm surprised you haven't said it yet. I know it's been out there. Jalen Johnson is breaking out. He's playing very well. Is it a perfect world? No. You'd like some cleanup defensively. But to give them 14 a game, he's shooting 62% from the field, which is kind of wild. But he's also shooting 40% from three. And so you contrast that with what John Collins could have done or was asked to do with the Atlanta team, with what Jalen Johnson is contributing to this Atlanta team. It's no disrespect to John Collins. I think he's very talented. I think the fit is just different. And I think with DeAndre Hunter and Jalen Johnson both playing well, it's not just the stats, it's how involved they are in the Hawks offense and how that balances things out. It's not just catch and shoot, which is kind of what John Collins ended up turning into towards the end of that run. They're involved. They're in pick and roll. They're in handoffs. They're moving. They're attacking in transition. If they're off ball, it's not just a kick for a shot. They can drive a closeout, keep an advantage, or go score. And that just kind of gives more boost to the Trae Young and DeJounte Murray pick and rolls. I think that gives the Hawks movement and flow a boost. Do you have any early Hawks thoughts? Because I got some more.
Okay. Well, before you jump back in, I'm glad you brought up the flow, because I think with the John Collins spot in particular, or just the four spot in particular, I think Atlanta wanted either someone that could really space or someone that could really, that could just actively act as a hub to keep things going. And John Collins was very much, not that this is his only skill set, but in terms of how he's used, it was, I will screen and roll or slip and roll, or I will space. And once the shot kind of fell away, and once teams started switching more of those pick and rolls, it's like, okay, what exactly do we get out of John? Not that he's a bad player, but defenses are treating him differently and he's not shooting well enough or even taking enough threes to where defenses have to bend. And so with Jalen, is he the role threat that John Collins is or was? Probably not. But it's more multifaceted. Like, you can trust him in short roll opportunities if necessary. If you do space him, you mentioned 40% from three, like the volume isn't super high right now. Teams aren't treating him like a knockdown guy yet, but he is shooting better than John has, or John did last year, so far this year. But to your point, the ability to drive closeouts is huge. And his passing ability, it allows them to keep things going. And then when you zoom out to the overall Atlanta context, now some of the side-to-side stuff that you were seeing flashes of when Quinn Snyder took over, it just feels like a more consistent part of their offense now. Trae and Clint can do something. If it doesn't work, we can flip it to DeJounte, and now he'd go. Which, to that point, DeJounte's been very good, particularly inside the arc. Nice to see the rim pressure perk up for him. He's just been hooping. But the flow just feels better. You mentioned fourth and pace. But, like, just in general, it feels like they're going to more things in the half court. It feels like they're just playing with a little bit more juice. More guys are active threats within that offense. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it's key for those two to be able to play better. So Atlanta has more than just Trae Young and DeJounte in pick and roll. We hope that opens things up for us. Now, you tie that movement and that flow into their top two players. DeJounte Murray is playing very well. He's off to a really good start. I don't know if it holds up, but I believe he's coming off a week since the 30th of October where he almost shot 50-40-90. While putting up 25 plus points. His attacks feel different. He's getting to his pull-up, of course, but it just feels like he's in and out in a better way. More sudden decision-making. If I don't have it, I'm getting off the ball. And now I can attack in different ways. I can go in transition. I can add some cutting, some offensive rebounding. He's impacting the way that he's helping this team win in a better way. Trae Young. Very easy to point to Trae Young shooting. 34.6% from the field, 28.2% from three. Not the best start, but he's still averaging over 10 assists. He's still giving you 20 points a night. And again, within the context, it just feels better. The way that they're using him off ball with movement into his actions, as opposed to he has to bring it up, he has to wait for a screen, he has to now create. It's more mix and match. It's a better flow. And you got to think, they're winning games without him shooting well. What's it look like when he starts to shoot well? And so that's where I start to think about the entire flow of everything they're doing. The other part, Nekias, the defense.
It's just
I don't know if it holds up, but I like the idea of turning up the activity defensively and working to evolve that defense, which felt like Clint Capella's in drop. I hope this works. Or I hope we can sustain a couple rotations after that. No, get up to the level. Let's put two on the ball sometimes. Let's rotate and help behind it, and let's play out of that, and let's sustain that. That should help them long-term as opposed to hoping it would work. I think having Capella and Okongwu, who can both do that, helps them be more consistent. And so I just give a tip of the cap to Quinn Snyder for the start they've had. A joke, and I'll throw it out here, kind of feels like Utah South or Utah 2.5. to a degree. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You had Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley. Now you got Trae Young and DeJounte. You had Bogdanovich and Royce O'Neal. Now you got Jalen Johnson and DeAndre Hunter. You had Gobert. Now you got Capella, but they're going to make Capella do a few more things defensively. It's funny that Bogdan is feeling like the joke, like the Joe Ingles, Jamal, the Joe Ingles, Jordan Clarkson role, as opposed to like actual Bogdanovich. But that's neither here nor there.
Got you. I appreciate the Hawks love from you. This is dope. I'm glad that you brought up Jalen Johnson before I did, though. I guess the opening week episode, sprinkled him in there. But
Jalen, did you just do a victory lap?
I'm not. I'm just.
Oh my god!
It's not even a victory lap. It's more so. I am generally the Hawks guy on this podcast, and so I'm glad that I didn't have to like strong arm you into a Hawks take. That you watched, you enjoyed, you brought him up. That's all I'm saying. That's it. Did you have another team that caught your eye?
Yeah, Philly. Let's talk Sixers, man.
All right.
Quick tip of the cap to JJ Redick dropping this stat on the old man and the three things. You can also click on that after you watch this. Nikias, who would have thought that Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, Kelly Oubre, and Tobias Harris would all be averaging more than 20 points a game?
Not me.
And who would have thought that quartet would make the Sixers the first team in NBA history with at least four players averaging 20 or more through the first five games of the season?
Yeah, that's a pretty wild stat.
It kind of stopped me in my tracks. I think it tells the story of the Sixers team and the buy-in they have right now and how well they're playing together at the moment. I think that's the biggest key for me. Obviously, Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey are huge. It's a small sample, but if I look at Joel Embiid, he's shooting 47% from three, which on top of everything that he does is pretty scary. The other thing I point to with Embiid, career high 6.2 assists per game right now. And the passing has been something I've been trying to sprinkle in or talk about over the last couple of years because it's been developing in a positive way. I do think the amount of dribble handoffs that the Sixers are running helps him to a degree, but he has felt more intentional about trying to make the right play and trying to showcase that passing. I think having the movement and cutting from Maxey, from Tobias Harris, from Oubre has opened some of that playmaking up. They can get it to him at the elbow and then play out of it. He can be more of a hub in that way. The one thing I'm noticing on his pops, or even when he brings the ball up or he's looking to ISO one-on-one, he is looking to get to that kick a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
1-2 dribbles, I see help, he's firing away. And so that's been a huge plus. In the post, I think I said it last year, but in the post, if Joel Embiid can see where the double's coming from or where the help is coming from, he's going to get that ball out quick. I think he's gotten a lot better at reading defenses and anticipating where his guys are versus where the help is coming from. I still think the key for Embiid is, can you get him on the move after he started his move? Can you get him on the half spin? Can you stunt and then double? Little things like that. That'll be probably what you watch throughout the rest of the season, but it's been a great start for him. Do you have any Embiid thoughts?
Oh, no. The only thing I was going to bring up, as you initially brought up Joel Embiid's name, was going to be the passing, and you pretty much nailed it there. Like, it's just keeping an eye on what he does against late help or those late doubles. But other than that, like, it's been a fun start to him. And it's something that we've all talked about, both here, during our watch parties, with JJ, is just keeping an eye on what the Maxey and Embiid partnership looks like and what the timing's going to look like there as Tyrese Maxey's figuring out, okay, when can I go? When can I hit Joel in the pocket? If this is going to be a pick and pop, how deep can I go before making this pass before that rotation comes to Joel Embiid? Like, those kind of things are going to be fun to monitor. But overall, like, it's been a fun year for him. It's been a fun year for Philly. Like, it feels like the pace, or at least the half-court tempo, is a little bit up. I think the handoffs help. I think turning more of the offense over to Tyrese Maxey certainly helps in the speed regard, because he's just going to get downhill so quick. It also just, you know, related to that, it just feels like they're getting to their stuff earlier. So if you do cut things off, like, you can just flow. And then at the end of the day, Joel Embiid can still just be a possession ender for you if all of your fun movement stuff doesn't work, which is terrifying for defenses to have to worry about Tyrese Maxey's speed. And I don't want to say the newfound aggression for Tobias Harris, because we've seen him get buckets for a very long time at this point, at this stage of his career. But with Tobias Harris being more involved, you got to worry about him as well. What Kelly Oubre is doing as a starter, has been fun. Someone that has been knocking down shots, but ultimately gets downhill quite a bit. It's nice. It's nice watching Philly play like this.
Yes, it's nice watching them play with that. It's nice watching people compete all the time. I think the biggest thing to keep an eye on, as you mentioned, the Maxi and Embiid pick and roll that people have talked about, I've been keeping an eye on how it develops and how they develop their chemistry. I think Tyrese Maxey ends up being tougher to guard in a higher pick and roll. That does take away some of the rolling ability from Joel Embiid. On these lower ones that they may set closer to the three-point line, can Tyrese Maxey mix his speeds up and find Joel Embiid in the pocket? Will he overpenetrate? That will take time to develop that chemistry. The question I have as we watch is, are teams just going to give Tyrese Maxey that space and say, hey, we're just going to rotate to Joel, whether he pops or whether he's in the pocket, we're going to just rotate to that and you're going to have to make a play. Now, what helps Philly, Tyrese Maxey, off to a great start. Very aggressive, very decisive. So as long as I think he doesn't overthink, I think positive things are going to happen. And the way that he's been able to get into the paint, some of the free throws he's been able to get to, his pull-up, it's a great sign when you're able to boost your scoring and your assist in the same year. So I think that should give you a good runway. Tobias Harris, aggressive. I don't know how Philly fans feel about it, but he's looking to score and he's looking to make plays. I think Kelly Oubre has been the big key for me. And you brought him up. I'm glad you brought him up. It's not just that he's scoring. Think about what you thought of Kelly Oubre before. Now imagine that where he's shooting 53% from the field and 44% from three. And it's the type of shots that he's taking and making and the ones that can be generated off Embiid, off Maxey, and some of the cutting and slashing that he's doing there. The fit just feels really good. I think their bench guys all know their role. They've set themselves up to compete. And so that's been fun to watch.
Got you. And I think just very quickly on the Oubre thing, like something that I've kind of had to recalibrate with him and a reason why I wasn't super surprised that he was a free agent deep into the process, despite his numbers, is figuring out, okay, how does he fit into certain offenses? How does he play off of guys? Like I always go back to like the Golden State stretch where all the motion, all the quick decision-making that's needed to operate in that system. And it just didn't seem like a great fit for him. You go to Charlotte and it felt better. But you think about the context, particularly last year, where there just wasn't a lot of LaMelo's. Like, okay, who exactly is tilting a defense for him so he doesn't have to cook as often as he does? And now you place him in Philadelphia, where Tyrese Maxey is a walking paint touch, or I guess a running paint touch for him. All the attention that Joel Embiid draws, and even Tobias Harris getting like your third or fourth best defender on any given night. Kelly has an easier context to score. Like, that's still what he does at his core. But now you see the efficiency and how he doesn't have to do as much. And then once you flow into some of these second units with him in it, he can go back to the cooking. But even then, they're playing a little bit faster with that second unit. So it's just been a fun start to the season. It's nice to see him play this well. Did you have any closing Philly thoughts?
Nope. What you got, man?
Actually, I have another Philly question for you before we move off of Philly. So just kind of zooming out, how long do you let this iteration of the Sixers rock, both in terms of implementing the new guys from the Harden trade or if they do want to truly leap into like the Sixers, I mean, to the Celtics tier in particular, to make some kind of splash before the deadline? Like how much runway do you give this particular group?
All the way up to the deadline. Yeah. For me, there's no rush to what are you adding that's going to elevate your team? I don't even think you know how good this team can be, especially since you've just made a trade. You don't know what the integration of Batum and Covington into rotation minutes does for your squad. You don't know the lineup versatility they could bring. So you don't necessarily have those answers. And I don't even think because you don't have those answers, you don't know what to swing at. So, I mean, you can make a move and we can make the points that will help you. But why risk that over the course of the season when, hey, we have something going right now. We just did this whole move and no longer have to deal with everything that just happened. Let's see if we can hoop for a little bit. And if we need something, we can make a move. If not, let's see how far this takes us. And now we can see what we need to elevate into that tier. I don't think you can put this one in the microwave.
Okay. Makes sense. Just wanted to see where you were on that. Because I was just trying to balance them wanting to take another step. Also, it's early enough in the season. So if you do want to make a bigger swing, you get more time to kind of figure out the chemistry stuff before the playoffs happen versus what you're just saying. Still trying to figure out what this group is and trying to see what you got there and letting that develop. So just want to see where you were. If you didn't have anyone else, I can go very quickly. I have a couple of teams, one with just each side of the ball, honestly. I want to start with Minnesota's defense. Let's talk about the Timberwolves very quickly. You mentioned with the Hawks, the double-digit leads that they had overcome. Minnesota was one of them. And that second half got nasty very quickly, particularly on the offensive end. But we're talking about Minnesota's defense right now. So 2-1 on the week, 3-2 overall. Best half-court defense in the NBA right now, with a pretty sizable gap right now. Granted, you know, small sample, we're still early in the season, all that good stuff. But an 82.9 defensive rating in the half court, which is first overall. Last year, they were 22nd in rim rate allowed. So far this season, they are fifth. Last year, they were 26th in defensive rebound rate. Right now, they are sixth. They are ending possession. They are walling off the rim, and they are also ending possessions, which is very basic but very effective for what they're trying to do. As for the personnel itself, Cat is working. It's not all perfect. You can still get him in space. There's still some pockets. If you space him on the weak side, he has to make decisions. It can get a little bit dicey for you. But the effort has been there all year long for him. I want to give him the hat tip there. I go to the Minnesota-Denver game, in which he battled against Jokic in the post, also knowing that he's got Rudy Gobert behind him to swoop in if necessary, as Gobert got the Aaron Gordon matchup. And for as much as you can throw off Nikola Jokic, Minnesota was able to do that. And so I've appreciated the work that Cat's done. Rudy Gobert has looked very good defensively so far. We will see how long that lasts. We've had many discussions about Rudy throughout the life of this podcast. But it's nice to see him, one, just kind of locking down and dropping in. And when he's activated as a roamer, if you have Cat taking on like the Jokic and stuff like that, watching his timing when he's spaced, which has been an issue for him in years past. That may still be an issue in the playoff context, but this past week, I go to the Utah game in particular, where he's in the corner defending John Collins. That would normally be, hey, what is he going to do here? Can Utah get him? He peels in, gets out John Collins, blocks a three. And it's like, oh, right, he does have all this length. And if he's able to time things, you can, again, disrupt the potential rim attempt and also stifle an offense. And so watching him navigate some of those possessions, that's intriguing. Glad Jaden McDaniels is finally back, made his season debut not too long ago. He's continued to fly around defensively. You see him roaming on the weak side. You also see him picking up tougher guard matchups. Anthony Edwards, the effort has generally been good. I'm still keeping an eye on the off-ball stuff, but screen navigation has generally been solid for him. The ISO defense has been good. I'm having a lot of fun watching Nikhil Alexander Walker right now. I know I'm not really talking about Minnesota's offense right now, but I want him to have a consistent jumper so badly. Because if he's able to nail that, I think he's around 19 minutes per game as a recording. Like, that's just going to be north of 25 with the way that this dude defends. Fun and ISO, good screen navigator. The hands are incredibly weak. I go back to the Utah game. There's a sequence late in the third quarter of that game. John Collins tries to ISO Cat on the right side of the floor. It doesn't really work. He kicks it to Keontae George. They flow into an empty side pick and roll. Nikhil Alexander Walker's on the opposite end of the floor. Kelly Olynyk, he was spaced on the left wing. He slides in, tries to set a pin in on Nikhil Alexander Walker. He just casually spins off of it. And so as Utah flows into this pick and roll, John Collins on the roll, Keontae George hits him in the pocket. Nikhil Alexander Walker shoots out of the weak side corner. And by the time John Collins really gathers this thing and tries to go up for the shot, ball's out of his hands because Nikhil Alexander strips him. Ball bounces to Colin Sexton. Colin Sexton thinks he has a drive. Nikhil is back in position, sets up to take a charge, quickly realizes that Colin isn't going to go straight into him. He's going to go further right. Slides again and then strips Colin Sexton before he can get the shot up. Which, brief aside, for whatever little bit of basketball media clout that I may have, I would like to cash it in. I want to talk to a stat keeper. Can a stat keeper DM me and explain the rules versus like steals versus blocks? Because like, the strip on John Collins counted as a block. And I'm just like, can we not just like have a category for strips versus blocks? I don't feel like that's a blocked shot. Like, am I just off on that? Like, very much semantic, man. But I feel
very
like
it's much.
Yeah. Like,
you would like the world to tell you who leads the NBA in strips?
Yes. Like, I just, if we're already tracking deflections, then I don't think strips are that far off. Like, I think it's like the weird midpoint between a steal and a block, especially if you're not regaining possession. But anyway, Nikhil Alexander Walker has been very fun. this Minnesota group is defending hard. And then you just think, zoom out, just think about the collective length that this team has, that you could just have three of Rudy Gobert, Cat, still limited, but a big guy, Jaden McDaniels, and Kyle Anderson. You could just have three of those dudes on the court at all times. That's a lot to try to navigate. And if they're all locked in, they just cut off so much space for you, which again kind of boils into teams haven't been able to take shots at the rim against them so far this year. That's huge. So just wanted to give the quit hat tip to Minnesota's defense. Did you have Wolf's thoughts?
Yes, I do. Number one, I love that you went through Minnesota's defense and their entire team without a single mention of Mike Conley.
He's also been
tremendously on brand by you. We'll just ignore the effort that he's giving and the screen navigation and being able to communicate what the play is when he's on one side mid play and 23 assists, one turnover. We'll just throw that right over the top rope. It's fine. Don't even worry.
Can I raise my hand?
Nope. You can't in 2 seconds, bud. You had literally 10 minutes and you didn't mention his name. I would say, to your defense point, the one thing that Rudy has done a great job of this year is anticipating when to help. His timing has been very good. I think overall, as the season's progressed, Minnesota's help defense has been very strong. Active on ball, we're showing bodies, we're getting back out. Pat's been able to mix in some nuance. Whenever I think Utah game, Walker Kessler sets a screen, he goes under. His man sets a screen, he's put two on the ball, he also mixes in drop. I think that's important for Minnesota to be able to balance those things, especially with those two bigs. My only problem with Minnesota, it's not that they're not good. I think they're a good basketball team. Have they fixed the things that will help them in a playoff context? Fair or unfair, that's where my eyes go. Mm-hmm. And I can't unsee Atlanta switching Trae Young onto Karl Anthony Towns on purpose. I'm sorry. I know Cat's been more aggressive. He's been more decisive. But they have to take that off the table. And then I need to make sure I see, okay, what happens to Rudy against a small lineup when he has to face someone who can drive and can shoot? Mm-hmm. And my thing is, we are about to find that out because, hey, you seen the Wolves schedule coming up?
Go ahead and lay it out for us.
Boston, New Orleans, San Antonio, two games at Golden State, Phoenix, and New Orleans. Those last five, all road games. So that defense is going to get tested, and we'll get some more answers about them. But an impressive start. I don't think you should sleep on Minnesota on both ends of the floor. I think they are moving in the right direction. But for them, they've got to be able to raise that ceiling. And to raise that ceiling, you got to answer a few more questions.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm glad you pointed out the schedule. It is going to get very dicey for them, so we'll see how that holds up. Some quick Rudy stats just to, one, annoy you, and two, before we move on to the second team I wanted to bring up. Rudy currently one of seven players averaging at least a steal and two blocks. Among 69 players to defend at least 20 shots at the rim so far, he's third in field goal percentage allowed behind Bam. And can you guess who the second player is?
No, I can't.
I would imagine you wouldn't be able to. Cade Cunningham, which further leads to the Detroit loop that I'm in, but whatever. On possessions featuring a pick and roll defended by Rudy Gobert, only 0.87 points per possession, which is one of the better marks in the league so far. More in line with what we've seen in the last three seasons, well, last four seasons, excluding last year, which was easily the worst mark. So back in line with that, 0.89 points per possession in the bubble year, 0.86 after that, 0.88 after that, up to 0.98 last year, and now back to 0.84 right now. So go ahead.
Can you do me a favor?
What's up?
Can you repeat that first stat for me that you said?
Which one? Seven players average at least a steal and two blocks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who are the other six?
Actually, I have that in the notes because I wanted to shout out one of the players that is also on that list. But Anthony Davis, Victor Wembanyama, Chet Holmgren, Brook Lopez, Asar Thompson, and Scotty Barnes. It's a fun group of defensive event creators. So that's been cool.
Okay. Does he have more or less stocks than DeAndre Ayton?
Oh, Lord. I would imagine more, but...
By 0.1. So, what do you say, bud?
I mean, Nurk, a little bit more. I don't know what to tell you.
Hey, Nurk is averaging a block and a steal, too.
Is he averaging two blocks, though?
Oh. Oh, please.
I'm just saying. The status.
Well, who's next, semantics, man? Come on, buddy. Two versus one.
I'm just, hey, that's a pretty big deal. Anyway, just a very quick thing on Utah. I just have really enjoyed watching their offense. Now, in terms of overall efficiency, it hasn't been great. It hasn't been a great shooting team. But I do enjoy what Will Hardy does and how he generates spacing for his players. And while they don't have like an elite guard creator, they do a good job, again, of generating space for those guards. They do have guys that get downhill, Jordan Clarkson, Taylor Horton Tucker, Colin Sexton, though for those two, you would like to see the passing calibration be a little bit different with those guys, but they can get downhill and put stress on you. The way that he is using Lauri Markkanen has been a lot of fun. Something that you pointed out, and that was just in my head as I watched some of these players, like with Kevin Durant in particular, where they get the option screens around the baseline and kind of pick where they want to go. They do that with Lauri Markkanen as well. And it's just like, what on earth do you do with a 7-foot movement shooter that can also put it on the deck and dunk on you? So that's been cool. And like, even with Walker Kessler, you think traditional pick and roll guy, like they will stash him on the wing and let him flow into handoffs from there. So like, he's not going to be treated as a shooting threat, but you still have to worry about him because of how he can flow into handoffs with others. So I've just generally enjoyed what Utah is doing. And then just in terms of their shot profile, 15th in rim rate, 19th in mid-range rate, 9th in three-point rate, third largest share in corner threes in the league right now. All of those are better than last year outside of the three-point rate overall. So I just wanted to get a quick hat tip to Will Hardy and what they're doing in Utah. What are your Utah thoughts? Because I think we've really touched on them this year.
Like what Lowry's doing, I've been impressed by how John Collins is fit. But if there was one place where John Collins was going to have the room to grow, it'd be Utah with the way they use their bigs, to your point. I am intrigued to see when or if they give the keys to Keyonte George, because I do believe that he's got a lot more to his game. And I think it might be time for him to shuffle a few more minutes his way. But I understand building it up the right way. But that is where I'm keeping an eye on. Jordan Clarkson's going to take and make big shots. He might miss them, but you can count on his production, or at least what he's going to bring to the offense. And they're going to be a tough team to play. I want to see how they figure out the road part of it. But again, this is Utah. You got to go back 10 years to the last time they've had a losing record at home. So you can play around, but you go to the Delta Center, you might walk out with an L.
Okay. Well, there's the Utah section. Let's move to some teams that we are thinking about. I will kick this one off. I'll try to be as brief as I can. I start with the Brooklyn Nets, which originally I was going to have them in the team that impressed. They did have a solid week, a nice comeback win against Miami. They fought against Boston, though Boston's just an absolute buzzsaw. We just need to have a Boston episode at a certain point and really just dig into everything that they're doing.
Yeah, we should. I only mentioned them last week. No problem.
You did. I'm just saying. It's like... only undefeated team left in the league right now. Again, not trying to poo-poo on what you said. I'm just saying. They've been so good. I would like to dedicate, like, time. Because it's going to get... there are only so many ways you can say in 15 seconds for me, anyway. Like, oh, this team's great. But anyway. Brooklyn right now, as of recording, 6th in half-court offense and 9th in transition offense. The transition offense doesn't really surprise me. 6th in half-court offense is not what I expected. It's like, wow, that's pretty cool. They are 27th in rim rate, which also kind of tracks. 8th in mid-range rate, 10th in three-point rate. In terms of efficiency, 13th at the rim, 1st in mid-range field goal percentage by a wide margin. Helps having Cam Thomas, helps having Mikal Bridges. 5th in three-point percentage. They're also 28th in half-court defense. And the transition defense hasn't been that good either. And so where I'm in a weird spot with Brooklyn is how they're going to balance this out when Nick Claxton comes back. Because I think he very much will help that defense as someone that can operate in a drop. They went to more drop in the preseason in particular, so we'll see what that's going to look like in the regular season. It's going to help their defense quite a bit. Offensively, the fit can get wonky with this group. And I think part of what's made Brooklyn so good so far offensively, like, yeah, they're seeing a bunch of switches, but they have a lot of room for Mikal to boogie. They have a lot of room for Cam Thomas to boogie. Dorian Finney-Smith has just been on an absolute heater to start the season as well. So, like, they're able to kind of spread you out and go 5 out or go 4 out, 1 in when Ben Simmons is at the 5. And they can spread you out that way, and they can just win the math battle in a way. When Nick Claxton comes back, how does that affect the guards? How does that affect Ben Simmons, who's been operating pretty solidly as a roller and as a handoff hub and has been a big reason why the transition offense has been as good as it is. How does that factor in? How do you balance where you're at with the half-court offense and what this defense is right now? Because they are not having fun on the glass. And ultimately, as switchy as they are, like, once teams get in the paint, it's just kind of tough. And so that's where I'm just kind of like, I like this from Brooklyn, but also that's just in the back of my head. So I'm just trying to parse through how much of this is real and how much is going to change once Nick Claxton makes his return.
I think it's fair. I do like the fact that Brooklyn is working to try and get to drive and kick, to try and keep the ball moving against switches. I think they have guys in good places, at least as far as attacking goes, whether it's Ben Simmons, whether it's Dinwiddie, whether it's Dorian Finney-Smith, whether it's Bridges. I guess, how do you balance what they're building towards with the context they have to work with? Because ultimately, it feels like switching is going to be the bit. And Nick Claxton can help them as a roller. If you face a team where Nick Claxton becomes a switch, now what do you do? And so it's easier when it's, you know, you have Ben and you can go four out, one in. Now can Ben and Claxton play together? So does that alter your rotations and your lineups? So it's just more, can they find ways to figure out what they want to do in those situations to win tight games? But I think they're moving in the right direction. They play with a belief. They play hard. A lot of those smaller lineups, not fun to deal with.
Yeah, ask Miami.
I mean, if you look at the defensive personnel, it's like it's not ideal. Like, you're running action. I look at Chicago, and it's like, cool, we have Zach LaVine, DeMar, and Nikola Vucevic. Well, I almost pulled a perk. Running pick and roll together, but the defenders are Dorian Finney-Smith, Mikal Bridges, and Ben Simmons. And it's like, well,
yeah.
Well, so for me, it's more bigger picture for Brooklyn than, hey, they can't do it.
I got you. Well, that's where I am on Brooklyn. And then very quickly on the Detroit front, it's more so just tracking the Jaden Ivey thing, or I guess just the guard room in general with Ivey, Killian Hayes, and now Marcus Sasser, who it was my first time really watching him during summer league. And I remember tweeting out, I like this dude. I like the way that he plays. He competes defensively, can operate on or off the ball. This is a fun dude. And now he's just getting minutes for Detroit right now. And so I'm just trying to sort through Monty Williams, who should just be there for a while by virtue of, one, him being a really good coach, but two, even if he wasn't, that contract is massive. So he's not going anywhere anytime soon. Him trying to establish a culture, trying to establish a baseline of competence defensively. And also, Jaden Ivey is really freaking important to the future of this franchise, or at least should be. And it's very clear, at least to me, that the defense is the reason why the minutes have been cut the way that they have been compared to last year. And so how do you establish that while also trying to prioritize whatever growth you need to see from Jaden? And zooming out, him plus Cade, or him plus Cade plus Asar. Can you get there? And so that's just a process that's been really interesting to me with Detroit to start the season.
The thing that I'm keeping an eye on, how far and how long does this go? And how do we balance what coach is trying to put in with Detroit versus what they need to be doing long-term? Because I can understand it from the fact that, okay, Cade's back. Let's work on our defense. Cade has more wiggle room. Jaden, you can go ahead and cook off the bench. Eventually, we can bring these together. I didn't have that as Jaden Ivey, you are the seventh man.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, okay, let's, how long does this last? It's no disrespect to Sasser, who has earned his minutes. But from a big picture perspective, you know, if you're not wearing a zip up, and you're wearing a polo sitting down, it's like, well, how do we know how good everyone is together, to your point? And it may just be a culture thing where, hey, you need to earn your minutes, and you earn your minutes by doing X, Y, and Z. Can you do that consistently? One of the problems that Houston had in the lead up to this year was there's not really people to bench you behind. So you just kind of get to play through things to a degree that doesn't really help you develop.
No one was getting nicks from the rotation?
Yeah. So, wow. Double entendre. Don't even ask him how. Anyways, I think that may be part of it. So for me, it's kind of like, okay, let's track this. I want to see what it looks like 10 more games. Is this just the thing? Is Jaden Ivey now do something that flips it? Because I feel like if you walk away from this year not knowing how good Cade, Ivey, and Asar could be together, I don't think you accomplished the mission to a degree.
Yeah. I had a defense because that's a lot of issue with young guards. Like, that's a very natural thing in the NBA. Like, it's hard. A lot more space to deal with. These guards are crafty. They're also just really freaking good at basketball. There's just going to be a general learning curve for Jaden. Offensively this year, though, just quietly shooting over 40% from three on solid volume. Like, he's been solid inside the arc as well. So, like, the offense, it's still very much the same level of explosion that we see from him mixing in the passes from there. That's why my thought is immediately, oh, he must really want him to nail these defensive habits in order to do this. And that's where you get Killian Hayes starting. And now you're seeing more from Marcus Sasser. And it's also just further complicated by, as we think about the overall best context for, like, Jaden or for Cade, again, a lot of their spacers are just out. So even some of the lineups that you may want to have, or even if you do still plan on cutting Jaden's minutes for a little bit, if you want to just give him the second unit with space to run with, you can't really mix and match the way you want to right now anyway. So I wonder how much that part also factors into the minutes thing, and where Monty may have just gotten to the loop where, okay, we don't have all these guys. I know this lineup will work and will compete defensively. As we stagger guys out, we just don't have the room to really get you up to 30-32 right now because of who we're trying to cobble together right now. So, again, it's not even a red flag. It's more, I don't know, like a light yellow, I guess, since we're this early into the season, just trying to see where everyone's at. So we'll probably have a better answer in a couple weeks or a month or so. So just wanted to bring that to the radar. That's all I had. What teams are you thinking about?
The New York Knicks. What are the Knicks? What have they built? And is this just the pattern where we have this thing that works, we get success out of it, we try and build on it, and then it stops working? This would be, what, the second time that would happen? I'm not all the way there yet, but I'm trying to figure out, like, Nikias, you know how many points they score a game?
I do not.
103.
Oh.
You know how many points they give up a game?
How many?
103.
Ah.
That is, I'm not a math genius, a zero differential.
Not what you want.
So which way are we going to go? Julius Randle, I have liked the passing that he has made. I have liked the reads that he has made. I've liked the flow for most of the season between Brunson, Randle, and Barrett. Julius Randle shooting 27% from the field. Julius Randle also leads the Knicks in assists with 5.2 a game. What do I do with that? Because clearly there is some good in there. But are the Knicks able to create the kind of shots they want to? I looked it up real quick. If you want to look at their last few games, right, Nikias? Think about this, if I can read correctly. 33 made field goals, 19 assists against the Pelicans.
Okay.
38 made field goals, 18 assists against the Cavs in Cleveland. 32 made field goals, 18 assists against the Cavs at home. 38 made field goals, 18 assists against the Bucks. That's not the kind of balance you would want. That's not the kind of shot creation you would want. You're kind of going backwards. Mm-hmm. What do I do with the fact that RJ Barrett is shooting 42.9% from three? That's fantastic, right? Two thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
Emmanuel Quickley is at 32. Dante DiVincenzo is at 33. Josh Hart is at 25%. And I don't know if the Knicks can afford for that to go backwards. Quentin Grimes, improved shooter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Yeah, he's a good shooter.
Taking more threes, right? Six a game, shooting 36%. Thumbs up, right?
It's fine, yeah.
He's averaging 7.3 total field goal attempts for the year. He's taken 8 two-point field goals this year. Who's driving? Who's kicking? Is the defense good enough? We're getting into question land with the Knicks, and I think they are better than they've showed so far this year.
Oh, boy. The guard room is always going to be fun. Like, I think for me with Julius, it's very much not just decision-making, but, like, the timeliness of his decisions. And I think that's kind of the weird place I get with him, because I feel like shots are going to fall or they're not. Like, I think it's fair to say Julius Randle will not be someone that only converts like 30% of their shots this year. Like, that's just not going to happen. Like, it's been a historically slow start to the season for him. And he's been like, this is the worst rim finishing start that he's ever had. That stuff is going to perk up. But for me, it's like, okay, when is he taking some of these pull-ups? When is he trying to score on some of these post-ups? You mentioned the assist. You mentioned the playmaking. Like, that's something that's popped for me. Like, when I was watching the first Cavs-Dicks game, and that was the TNT game, right? And it's like, oh, these are some really good passes. And I ended the clip of some in the thread that I had. Like, they didn't end up in assist because the shot was missed. Like, okay, this is good stuff from Julius Randle. The process is fine here. But then you have the Bulls game and some pockets there where it's like Julius Randle on transition. And how did the transition opportunity turn into a mid-post fadeaway? That's not how that's supposed to go. That's a shot that he can make. But why are we doing this now? And so I wonder how long it takes for him to kind of get back to any sort of balance, really. The shot regressing to the mean versus decision-making being better, like not just making good passes, but diagnosing this is what I need right now and getting to it. I don't know how long that takes. It's weird to do that. And then also just Jalen Brunson can do whatever he wants, almost independent of what everyone else is doing, which is a positive, but also in terms of your overall Knicks flow, you don't really want Jalen Brunson cooking and then RJ will hit shots, but those are kind of shots defense might want to give up right now. And Julius is doing whatever this is. And the second unit that we're expecting the blitz teams is uneven. Like, you don't want all of that happening at the same time. And so it's early, so I'm not super concerned, but I'm kind of with you that I'm getting closer to question land with them. But I also just want to watch a little bit more deeply with New York before I have a super firm take on them. Did you have any other Knicks notes or any other teams that you wanted to bring up?
The Thunder, got a question for you.
Okay.
So is the bit with them just shooting and defense? Is it just, did they make threes or not?
I mean, I hope not. There's got to be a little bit more than that. But no, I understand where you're going.
Because if you look at the difference in their losses, they're shooting 29% and their wins are shooting 47%. Is there more to it?
I mean, yeah, especially on the defense portion of things. But the shooting is something that I talked about last year and heading into the year. Will they be able to knock down enough shots? Because as fun as their starting group is, and they have all these creators and they have their guards, they use them as screeners all over the place, and Chet's going to help as a role slash pop threat, et cetera, et cetera. If teams feel like we can switch and also just show help and we can funnel shots to Lu Dort, take a bunch of threes. Jalen Williams, as your jumper continues to improve, take a bunch of threes for us. Shea, we are terrified of your drives. Take a bunch of threes. If it turns into that, they're not getting to the drive and kick, and the three-point shooting becomes even more important. And this isn't a roster that is stocked with elite shooters. I'm a big fan of Isaiah Joe. Chet has shot the absolute leather off the ball so far. He has room to take more, to be frank about it. But he shot the leather off of it. And even with like Shea can knock down threes. Is he someone that you're running off the line like Steph? No. And so like that balance is going to be important. And that kind of zooms back out to your original question heading into the year with the Thunder. What happens when teams shift how they guard them? How are they able to adjust to how they're being defended? And so, again, like I'm not ringing alarm bells. Like I do think overall like, they've played pretty well this year, but it's worth monitoring for sure.
All right, let me ask you a Miami Heat question.
Oh, joy. All right, well, good.
Is the progress that they've shown more or better than their record?
I would say so. Like the fact that we've already got like Jimmy Butler's missed the game, Bam's missed the game, the wings that they brought in, like Josh Richardson's already missed some time. Like that muddies the waters. It does feel like with the second unit in particular, like the process just feels a lot better. It feels like they're generating good looks. I've really enjoyed Miami second unit. I'm just talking through it. I guess for me, it's like how healthy can this group get? And then on top of that, can they improve the guard room, period? I guess is where I'm at. Like, I don't think that changes regardless of what the record is.
My thought was you have this version of Bam, more aggressive, more decisive. You have this version of Tyler Hero, who is playing just ticked off and continues to hoop. You have probably 9 players that you feel comfortable playing that fit what you want to do. Is it just we play defense better? is it just, and shout out to my guy, Cooper Moorhead, who has put this thought in my head and I can't unsee it. Jimmy Butler shoots more because Miami has these offensive possessions where it's like, oh yeah, Jimmy probably would have shot that if this was a different month. And he didn't shoot it and they keep playing. But you have the improved play of Duncan Robinson. They have the fit. Which part is it? Is it the offense or is it we need to tighten this defense up and hope that we can compete? Because their schedule is not kind. That's the reason why I asked that. They got a whole lot of road games ahead of them. I want to say if I can count quickly, which I'm not great at least 9 of their next 11 are on the road. How does that factor in? Because this is not the year to get off to a bad start.
And just quickly on that point, like you already seen, like the Bam comments, the Hero comment, or the Bam comments and the Jimmy comments about we can't have this kind of start. We need to rack up some wins. We know where we are with this, just this iteration of this group. We don't know where everyone's going to be at the deadline. It's like, oh, wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why are we getting this opening weekend? Hold on. Let's wait a minute here. And so I would imagine you could feel that kind of internal pressure with them. To your original question, though, I feel like I've had more beef with the defense than the offense. And with Eric Spoelstra already tinkering with the rotation, like I'm just not sure when we see Kevin Love in particular. I would imagine his eye is also towards getting that defensive base back to where they needed to be. Because when that defense is at full tilt, it just gives them a lot more leeway for the offense. And even if Jimmy isn't super aggressive, which just in general, a colder start to the season for him. Like even in years past, he may not be taking 18, 19, 20 shots a game. But you feel that offensive the offensive impact with the playmaking, with the post-ups, more timely shot making. He just hasn't really been able to hit much of anything to start the year. That's going to perk up, so I'm not super concerned, but it's worth noting within this context. That's also why I'm not super concerned about the offense. The defense, again, you keep an eye on the guard room. Where is Kyle Lowry going to be? Like, he's been solid to start the year, but where would that be in December? Where would that be in January? Drew Smith can defend, but that factors into the offense. Like, okay, what do you do with him on the other end? Josh Richardson's been fine. Duncan Robinson's competing, but that's still going to be someone that teams target and try to get him in action when they got the second unit in. I already mentioned Kevin Love. Thomas Bryant certainly competing, but you know what questions I have about Thomas Bryant in space in particular. And if they are going to be committed to having him at the level, can you trust the defense behind him? We shall see. We know what Bam can do, but it can't just be Bam. So those are my cliff notes on Miami right now. You know I can go on Miami, but I'll cut it there. All right, any players you want to shout out then?
Yes, let's have some fun. For you, everyone listening audio-wise, YouTube-wise, going to introduce you to a very dunker spot stat that I could probably only use right now.
Okay, let's go for it.
So, Nekias, there are three players who have scored 89 or more points, made 12 threes, and shot 60% or better through the first five games of a season. Can you name any of them? Got him.
Once you said 89 points, I was like, yep. Wait a minute.
Yeah, dig deeper. You should be able to get one of these.
Is Steph one?
No.
Okay. I was thinking about that. Because... now it's gonna bother me because there's someone I looked. I was like, wait, this guy's shooting 60. Oh, is Dylan Brooks one of them?
You went in reverse order, but yes.
Okay.
Chris Paul in 2009, 2010 was the one I thought you would get. Richard Jefferson in 2010, 2011, and Dylan Brooks this year. Dylan Brooks is shooting 60% from the field, y'all, on just 10 field goal attempts a game. Nekias,
you mean he's not hijacking the offense?
No. That's the least amount of field goal attempts he's had since his first two seasons in the league. He's averaging 17.8 points a game and a career high of 1.6 steals. Salute to Dylan Brooks.
Good stuff, a good stat pool.
And shout out to another one for you. Got another one for you, bud.
Okay.
This one should be a little easier. I'll lighten it up on you.
Okay.
Four players in the last 10 years have had a 30-point, 8 rebound, 7 assist, 4 steal, and 3 block game.
Oh.
Can you name them?
37, 6, 4, and 3? That's the bit?
30 points, 8 plus rebounds, 7 plus assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks.
Got you. Okay. In the last 10 years, I would imagine LeBron has to be one.
There's one. There we go. Okay. Now he's cooking.
Okay.
He's
back in rhythm. One. Is Giannis one?
No.
Okay. Is Embiid one?
No.
Oh, no. Is KD one?
Yes, that's two. Okay. Come on. Come on. Here we go.
Well, Scotty, it sounds like Scotty Barnes.
No.
Oh, wow. Mm-mm. Oh, the Sunday. Okay, never mind. I'm going to tap for purposes of time. Who are the other two?
James Harden and Desmond Bane.
Oh, that's on brand.
AKA Desmond Bane.
He got
he's taking another leap, y'all. He's taking another leap. The Grizzlies are not winning much right now, but this does feel like another important stretch of play where you're seeing that he's continuing to get better, and that is going to help them long term.
Well, shout out to Desmond. Did you have anyone else?
Draymond Green.
Okay.
Non-shenanigan addition. So last year, I pointed out that it really felt like Draymond was trying to like finish with force on his roles, right?
Mm-hmm.
This year, have you noticed he's shooting the ball? So he has 3 straight games of 10-plus points, 2 straight games of 10-plus field goal attempts. He's taken 11 threes in the month of November. We, as of recording, are 6 days in. For reference, Draymond Green took 17 threes in the whole month of November last year. So just keep an eye on the aggression.
Okay. In addition to the defense remaining very, very good. Also, just another team that just needs an episode from us. The Golden State Warriors are just really good. That's a fun development. Steph Curry playing MVP caliber basketball right now. I just want to sprinkle that in. One of the players that I was going to bring up for like the players we're thinking about section, I'll just save it for if we do a Warriors-centered thing. Andrew Wiggins is off to a really weird start this year. I will just table it and I will keep it there. Did you have more players or was that?
No. What you got?
Okay. Well, then I will very quickly give the hat tip to Scotty Barnes, who you mentioned a Desmond Bane leap. Scotty's at 23-10-6, still in 2 blocks, basically to start off this year. Currently 1 of 5 players to average at least 22-9-5 right now. Jokic, Embiid, Luka, LeBron are the other 4. So that's been fun. As we talked about a little bit earlier with Rudy Gobert, he is 1 of 7 players averaging at least a steal and 2 blocks per game right now. Steve, the early caveat, this will regress. He's not going to do this all year. He is shooting 59% on 2-point jumpers this year. And what's more important than the number for me, which again, that is going to regress. He's not going to do that all year. The comfort that he has with that jumper, the variety in which he's getting to that jumper, it's not just late in clock. They find him in the short corner. He pulls it. Like, he is getting into step backs and side steps. He is posting dudes up and turning over the shoulder and putting the ball up. He's showcased a new level of comfort with that jumper. And then you step behind the line. Not only is he shooting 42% from 3, which would easily be a career high for him. 5.4 attempts for Scotty Barnes from 3, which, again, would easily be a career high for him. He was at 2.9 last year. To nearly double your volume and have this kind of efficiency bump. Again, I don't think he's going to be a 42% guy. If he settles in at 36, 37, if he settles in at 35, considering he was at 28 last year, and beyond, again, the actual percentage just kind of proves if you duck under, I will take this in rhythm. I'm not scared to do that. If you switch and leave too much space, I will shoot. I'm not scared to do that. In addition to what he can do as a driver, what he does on those post-ups, in which I just love his cadence as a post-up guy. He very much operates to the beat of his own drum. It's a lot of fun, a whole lot of fakes, shakes, shoulder into your chest. Now it's a post hook. It's like, well, I don't know what to do with this dude. It's like Kyle Anderson Eve, but like more athletic, some kind of way. It's a lot of fun watching him. And then defensively, I am so glad I do not see Scotty Barnes pressuring guards 50 feet, 60 feet from the basket so far this year. Thank goodness that man is defending 3-5 more than he did last year, because now we are just seeing, one, he just looks better in ISO, but 2, he's been activated more as a help side defender. And that's where you see, you know, in the box score, the steals, the blocks. But it just feels so much better watching him react, because he processes the floor so well. You see that offensively, but defensively, he reads things as they're happening. So, like, that awareness has gotten better. Like, we talked about some of the off-ball stuff with Scotty during the rookie reports when he was there, and last year, Slaps is there. That just feels a lot better. And I think the easier defensive context has led to a much more impactful season for him defensively. Scotty's here. I am having fun watching him. Now, going back to previous episodes, I do have overall contest questions with Toronto, but Scotty blooming in the midst of those, I think bodes very well for his future. Quick hat tip to Donovan Mitchell, who I don't know if you can quietly average nearly 33 points a game, but 32 and a half points per game, 64% on twos, Steve. 64% as of this Monday afternoon recording. 40% on threes on solid volume, 89% from the line, six assists, 2.3 steals as well. The energy defensively, especially as Cleveland kind of mixes in, showing some pressure defensively in pick and roll. Watching him roam around and play the passing lanes has been a lot of fun. And then offensively, I'm just enamored with the drives and like the windmill gathering. He's just sprinkling in touch shots over dudes. It's crazy. The drives have been fun. He can get to his pull-up three whenever he wants to. He's had to shoulder a much larger burden with Darius Garland missing as much time as he has to this point. Just got Jared Allen back, who's naturally one of his top screening partners last year. So the context should get a little bit easier for him moving forward, but he's been a lot of fun. Quick hat tip to Shaedon Sharpe. Portland Trail Blazers, you know, they did lose to Memphis last night, but a 3-1 week for the Portland Trail Blazers. Shaedon Sharpe has been a lot of fun. I know a lot of people are going to go back to that ridiculous block at the end of what turned into an overtime game between Memphis and Portland. Portland ends up getting that one. But the defense does generally feel better. I just quietly say, oh, like on that play, if Marcus Smart makes a better pass, I don't know if he can get to that, get to the corner for the block there. The passing play was not great. I don't know why he go bounce past there. But anyway, the athleticism is insane. Defense feels better. Offensively, I've enjoyed his passing. Like, he's not doing like the Luka skips and stuff like that, but he does seem to have a better pace about himself. He's making better decisions with the ball. He glides as a driver. The shooting still is there. Just going to this past week, shot very well from three, but like 6 3-point attempts and also 6 free throw attempts feels pretty good to me. I'm glad he's not just settling in on the jumper or not just throwing his head into dudes. So like that process feels better. It's been a fun start for Shaedon Sharpe. Tyler Hero, 26-6-5 this year. One of 6 players averaging 25, 5-5 so far this season. The others, Jokic, Embiid, Luka, Devin Booker, if you want to count him just because he's missed so much time. And Tyrese Maxey. So we just can't get away from the Maxey, the Hero thing, but that's fine. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Like, I'm really enjoying how they're mixing in the on and off ball usage for Tyler Hero. The game seems to be slowing down for him offensively as well. It's not safe to play drop against that dude. So I'm just having a lot of fun there. And I think the last guy I will shout out, Zach Collins. Go read A Farewell to Takes if you want to get more on Zach Collins, but he was my screener of the week as I do the Screen Time series. But just in general, Zach Collins has been such a fun hub for the San Antonio team. And, you know, I've said it on the pod, I'll say it again. I was very much wrong about that signing in terms of, you know, the amount of games that he had missed heading into the San Antonio stands. Like, I don't know if you give him this kind of contract. We need to see it. But he's been healthier. The screening's been fun. The pick and pops have been fun. He's shooting super well from three, but comfortable out there. He does have the history of knocking down those shots, so I expect that to bounce back. The passing has been a lot of fun. The post-ups also very fun for him. Just watching him crank against one-on-one matchups. Like, he's in that weird sweet spot to where he's good enough to garner those one-on-ones, but like teams don't send doubles at him yet. So you just get these opportunities to watch him cook and like go back and watch some of the Phoenix film from the past week since they played twice. Zach Collins has just been, he's just been good. Also playing a very important role, just defending five. So Wemby can be utilized more as a four and roam around. And we see what kind of impact Wemby's having defensively so far. That's at least in due part to Zach Collins taking on those tougher assignments. So just wanted to toss out a quick hat tip to Zach Collins. You seem surprised.
Oh, the Donovan Mitchell segment. We'll circle back to that one day.
We're going to circle back to Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, you got free throws?
I just got a few. Do you have free throws?
I do.
Okay. I imagine I have less than you, so I will get mine out of the way very quickly. Jason Tatum or Luka so far this year?
Ooh, extremely unfair question. Jason Tatum has been very, very good. Very, very good. The drives have been key. I will go with Luka for right now, because of how his play has elevated Dallas, but I would have to sit with it as the season goes on.
Okay, got you. Who starts first, Trey Jones or Jaden Ivey?
Trey Jones.
Okay.
That lead point Sullivan alone. Just let him, he's out here just doing stuff. Let him out there do stuff.
Okay, well, while we're Spurs adjacent and as we've been like schedule adjacent in this pod, which Wemby matchup are you most excited for moving forward? His next five games, or the Spurs' next five games, you got Indiana, New York in the Garden, Minnesota, so we'll get some Wemby Rudy, I would imagine. Miami, we may see Bam against Wemby, which should be fun. We just saw OG Anunoby against Wemby on Sunday. And OKC, and we get Chet and Wemby again.
Which of the ones am I most excited for?
Yeah, or I guess which of those five are you most excited for?
Miami intrigues me because I feel like they're going to do something, throw something at them, because that feels like a very Miami thing to do. I'm going to go OKC. Should be a really great in-season tournament matchup.
There we go. There we go. With the thumbs up. What a professional. What a professional. Steve, what free throws do you got for me?
What do you believe in more, Kevin Love's defense or Yusuf Nurkic's finishing?
I feel like the answer is just no. It's weird because like Love's out of the rotation and like we've now have games where Nurk just didn't close because of the
Buddy.
At least you saw Love do it a little bit in the playoffs. We'll go Kevin Love.
Okay. Why did Max Christie think that In the Club by 50 Cent was an old school song?
What year was Max Christie born in? That's probably, he might have been born when that song came out. That might be the bit.
How do you feel about Malik Monk and JaVale McGee running more pick and roll than Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo?
It's more like, I'm not surprised Malik Monk is running pick and roll. So I guess the surprise more is that JaVale is just firmly in the rotation and that's been solid. Also to the Max Christie thing, he was born February 10th, 2003. So that very much explains why In the Club would be considered an old song for him. Yeah, man, 42 through what, five or six games for Milwaukee, that's low. Like, even if you are of the mind that, okay, we know what we have here, let's establish the rest of the base. Like, I can get that conceptually. That's still very low. Much lower than what I thought it was going to be. So surprise level's high for me.
Okay, is there a team whose favorite player would not want Patrick Beverley on their team?
I mean, you can just cross Toronto off. This
all right, there we go. We found one. That's all we needed. What has put Heat fans in a tougher spot? Their record, their off-season talk and conduct, or the Heat culture alternate court?
I feel like the Heat court has put outside people in the headspin more than Heat fans. It's probably the off-season stuff. I think they were very ready for Dame, and then it just didn't happen. And that's been a large discussion point.
Sam Presti said the Thunder have to finish their breakfast first. Will you now listen to me about my Thunder thoughts?
What does that mean?
It's fine. All right. Answer. It's cool. Kevin Durant said he stacks up picks when he plays my GM in NBA 2K. Are you surprised by that strategy from KD?
Actually, yeah, I am kind of surprised. Like, I would have taken KD as the let's get these guys on the squad type beat versus the slow build.
That was a great answer. A stronger Wemby analysis. OG Anunoby saying he's tall or Pop saying, yeah, he's versatile.
The OG comment is so on brand, dude. That is so on brand. As someone that's gotten to talk to him a couple of times, like, yeah, that is just the answer you're going to get from him.
How good did you feel after the Eagles beat the Cowboys, man?
Oh, God, man. I feel better today than I did yesterday. I guess I'll put it that way. Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, like, probably like a 3, honestly. Which says a lot about me as a fan.
Quick question for you.
Okay.
What time did that game to kick off?
Oh, no. That was, what, a 425 Eastern tip? Like, it's 430-ish, somewhere in there.
Okay. The hashtag is Big Agenda. 7:37 p.m. Nekias Duncan tweeted out, yeah, this is going to be much worse than the Jets loss. I can't believe we gave this away like this. It's inexcusable. Break after break after break, and we gave it away with penalties. Unbelievable. The Eagles won that game.
Brother, I need you. If we had more time on the podcast, like, I would send you a YouTube link. We would do a live watching of you watch the final drive, dog. When I tell you, they stacked up penalties and just general nonsense. And that's after, like, a three and out on what should have been just the game-clinching drive, in which Philly has been very good at those this year. And then that's the one where it's just like, oh, well, we get nothing here. It's just going to be a punt. And they just march down the field with, Anyway, 8-1. That's all that matters.
Hit the horns.
Thank you for listening to or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. As a reminder, we will be on the channel every Tuesday with an episode of the pod. So stay tuned, stick with us, continue to roll with us. And for those who have been supporting already, we really appreciate y'all. Subscribe to JJ Redick's YouTube channel if you have not already. You can follow me on Twitter at NekiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link to the room will be in your description, either with YouTube if you're watching or on the audio side, which I should quickly remind you that we are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Anyway, that link should be hyperlinked in your description. Just click on that, enter your information, your league pass description, etc. It is free, no shenanigans. And if not, you just copy and paste the link in the description into your browser, into your information. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Ooh, great show, Nekias. Hey, how's the Jackie Young Sabrina thing going on in Team USA?